So my name is Nicole Gardner. Can you state your name for me?
My name?
Yes.
Okay. Arnold Carosa.
Okay. And for the first question, when and where did you serve and what regiment were you a part of?
Okay. I've got it all written down here.
Okay.
What did you want to know first?
When and where did you serve and what regiment were you a part of?
Question one. I was inducted in the Army, or I went in the Army, in 1944, and I returned, I was discharged in 1947. Where I was in Yokohama, Tokyo, Hiroshima, Japan. Now, my outfit was, I was part of the 229th Ordnance Battalion. Okay?
Question two. Did you want to go and fight in the war, or were you enlisted as part of the draft?
Okay, now this is the story. I did not enlist in I did not enlist. United States government sent me a letter saying, "Greetings, your friends and neighbors have selected you to serve." I don't know who my friends and neighbors were, but I had a report. That was it.
Is there any specific moment you think about often or more often than other ones, which is question three?
Well, when I went to Japan, when I was stationed in Japan, the most devastating part of it was I went to Nagasaki and Hiroshima, and I saw what happened when they dropped the bombs. And it's something that I will never forget. What I've seen, I don't want to see again. Of the destruction of the buildings and all, and other people, some of the people I've seen, you know. So I don't want to ever want to see anything like that anymore. So that's the only thing right at this moment that, you know, to answer your question, your third question.
Was there ever a point where you just wanted to give up and go home to your family and friends? And then, like, what got you through those times of wanting to go home, which is question four?
Well, I wanted to return home at all times, but I just stuck it out and went through it. I had no alternative. I was in the Army. I had to listen to them. They told me what to do, when to do, and how to do it.
For question five, did you write home to your family and friends often, and then did they write back to you while you were in Japan?
Oh, yeah. I wrote back to my mother and father about, once a week or every other. Whenever I had a chance, an opportunity, I would sit down and I would write. I would like to have said it was about, once a week, but sometimes it's once every other week, you know, something like that. As I say, it was hard to say because whenever you had some time, you did. And they told me what was going on in New York, and I was, you know, I couldn't tell them what I was doing, but they knew I was in Japan anyway, you know. Okay?
Was there a time where you ever thought, like, this is it, I'm not going to, like, make it home to see my family? Which is question six.
I never thought about that, not making it home. No, I always said I wanted to come home. I was going to come home. No question about that, you know.
What was a normal day like in, like, the life of a soldier in Japan? Which was question seven.
Well, there was no normal day. You just did what you did and what you were told to do, and that's basically what it was all about. I had a job to do, and I was a cook and an MP in service overseas. I was a cook for 12 hours and 24 hours off. If we needed an MP at the front gate, one of us would usually say, okay, they'll take a shift over if they weren't going to do anything for the day. So basically that was it. Other than that, if you were going to go out, you know, if you didn't want to do it or if you weren't asked, on your day off, you would go into town, into Japan, you know, and try to learn more about the customs of the Japanese people. Because you got to remember one thing, too. Where I was stationed in Sakita, which is a town where we were, it was a farm town. Those people had nothing to do with, basically, with the war. They were old farmers that did what they had to do, made crops for the government, because the government told them how much was their share and how much was supposedly go to their government to supply their soldiers, you know. But that's about what it was, you know. I learned an awful lot from those people. I mean, I couldn't speak their language. But, you know, you got into a conversation and you kind of put words together and so forth and so on. And that was basically what it was all about, really, you know. Okay, something else?
For question 8, what did you carry on, like, on your body on, like, a daily basis? Like, whether it was while you were in the kitchen or while you were...
Well, when I was in the kitchen, I cooked. When we were out on parole, or as an MP, I carried a 45 pistol. I always had my dog tags with me, you know, because you always kept them on. And I always had my wallet. And in my wallet, there was nothing too much other than the picture of my mother, my father, and your grandfather, because your grandfather was a little baby or a little boy. I think he was about 4 or 5 years old when I went into service, I think. I'm not even sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it hard to, like, I didn't, like, write this question down, but was it hard to, like, leave your family and leave my grandpa, like, not knowing how long you would be away or what you would, like, miss in, like, his life?
Well, yeah, you know, I did. As far as that goes, I did. But you know what? There was times when you were so busy you couldn't think of these things, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to try to put into words. There's times when you sat down, you had a moment rest or whatever you were doing, you think about it. But you'd always think about, you know, the family, home, and so forth and so on. What I had in mind to do when I did get home, when I was discharged and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was basically what it was. I wanted to get home as soon as I possibly could. That was the most important thing. I liked being around different people. I mean, because to learn cultures of another country, which I would have never known. And believe me, in Japan, there is an awful lot of cultures that are different than in the United States. Now, I'm talking about 70-some-odd years ago, so today it's altogether different.
Yeah. You know?
Okay?
Yep. For question 9, how was your life different when you came back home? Like, obviously, like, there was a lot of difference, but, like, what did you notice that was, like, most changed, like, when you came back home?
Which question you're on?
Oh, question number 9.
9? Oh, yeah. Hang on. I got it written down. Hang on.
Okay.
I kind of said that to you, you know. Other than my siblings being older when I got home, and your grandfather, you know, and so forth and so on, got older looking when I came home. Because being a little boy, now he was, what, maybe about 7 years old, 8 years old when I came home. I don't even remember, but I would say around that time, you know, that was his age, you know. And it was great to see him being grown up a little bit, you know. And Uncle Gino, the same thing. Mm-hmm. He was a little older. He was like the age of your grandfather when I came home, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was quite an experience, you know. Great grandma and great grandpa. Mm-hmm. To me, they looked the same when I came home from service, you know. My mother wanted to cook everything in the world for me. And my father says, "You're still under my roof. You do as I say." You know? But I was always a joke, you know, and so forth and so on. But it was great being home, you know. That was about it, you know. Okay, number 10?
Yes. Do you remember the date you left and returned?
Okay, I left Port Japan Columbus Day in 1945. And I sailed to the Aleutian Islands. And this is a story I got to tell you. I sailed to the Aleutian Islands from California. And we were going to be part of the invasion fleet of Japan. But while we were up there, one morning when I woke up, I looked out, you know, went on deck, and I saw the ships. There was thousands of ships in the water, and that was part of the invasion fleet. We didn't know about it when we sailed until we got out there. And then we were told by loudspeaker on board ship that we didn't have to go and fight Japan anymore because they surrendered. They surrendered a few days before we were notified, I guess, or something like that. Yeah, and then we were considered not as invaders anymore or invading Japan. We were settled for being army of occupation. When we got there, we had our guns with us and so forth and so on. But there was no shooting, no nothing. Everything was all quiet. You know, they knew that they had surrendered, and that was that as far as it goes. I returned to the United States. I returned from Japan to Seattle, Washington. And I got to Seattle, Washington in about June, the middle of June or the ending of June in 1947. And then I got a plane from there to come home to New York, where I was officially discharged in Fort Lewis, Seattle, Washington. But I came home, and I came back to the United States July 7th, I believe, in 1947. And the reason why I remember that is because Uncle Louie, which you don't know, my brother who came after me, mm-hmm. he died. And, well, he didn't die at that time, but his birthday is July 8th. So I remember I was home the day before his birthday. So that's how I can remember that. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
And then question 11, what did you do in your free time or, like, time you weren't, like, on parole? Like, you weren't paroling?
Oh, well, when I was in Japan, what I try to do is try to get around and learn as much as I can about the people, the Japanese people. As I say, they were farmers. They didn't, you know, they didn't know half of what I think most people think they did. They were very knowledgeable about United States. Most of them were. Because most of them told me stories about New York that I didn't even know about, that they were here, you know, in their younger lives, mm-hmm. you know, that they visited and so forth and so on. Yeah. But it was interesting. You know, you sat down where you can with them, you know, and you try to piece the stories together, and you got to know what it was all about. And so forth. So it was very interesting. You know, I didn't try to indulge in too much of their country and so forth and so on. But I try to learn as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But one thing I want to add to this whole
absolutely.
Story, and I think you would like this. The battleship where they surrendered was the Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And the battleship, the Missouri, where they signed the declaration of the ending of the war, was done on the bow of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And the bow of the ship was a part of the ship that your great-grandfather built.
Really?
Yes.
That's
in Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, wow.
The ship was built in Brooklyn, New York. And great-grandpa, which was my dad,
mm-hmm.
he worked during the war. He worked in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And because he had to work in some sort of, what the heck was it? Something to do with the forces of the country. There's a word for it. I can't remember the word right now. What was it called? Defense worker. He had to work in the defense, otherwise he would have been drafted.
Oh.
But great-grandpa couldn't have been drafted because he had five kids, and he was over 35 years old. So he didn't have to worry about that. But he had to go work in a factory what did something for the Army, Navy, Marines, or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was a good part of the story that you would like to hear, Ed, and the report for yourself.
Do you have,
is that
like,
enough for you tomorrow?
Do you have any other like stories or like things you remember from the war that like I didn't like write down but like you wanted to share? If not, it's fine. It's kind of like on the spot, I know.
No, I'm trying to remember, hon. You know, there were certain things that, like I say, I could remember vigorously
mm-hmm.
about the young lady that was worked in our mess hall with us
mm-hmm.
because we tried to get the Japanese people work around the factories that were being worked by American soldiers. But in our kitchen, we used to have late young ladies that would come and serve the soldiers. Our outfit was all specialists.
Mm-hmm.
We had about 300 men, 350 men in our company. But we were, every man there was a specialist of some sort in automobile mechanics. And they saw to it that the Japanese people who they hired knew what they were doing, you know, repairing engines and repairing transmissions and rear ends of cars, trucks, replenishing trucks. But in our mess hall, we had this young girl who came from Nagasaki. And one day we were talking about it, you know, in between meals and so forth and so on. And she says to us, would you like to see? So I said, would like to see what? She opened up her blouse, and she was in Nagasaki when they dropped the bomb. And she had on a plaited skirt. A plaited shirt, and that plaited shirt was embedded, the design was embedded in her body.
Oh.
And that I always remembered. And of course, when she took off her shirt, we couldn't see anything other than what she wanted to show us, you know. Mm-hmm. She showed us her back, where it was all burnt in with the design on it, you know. And she started to tell us some other stories, you know. But at that time, you know, we listened and so forth and so on. But then when I went there and I saw what was going on, you know, I said to myself, I never want to see this again. Mm-hmm. Never. So then I come home and I married her aunt. And that was another world.
Did you know Auntie Anne before you left the war, or did you meet her like after you came back?
I met Auntie Anne after I came back from war. I knew her visually before I went, mm-hmm. but nothing, you know, I just saw her and that was it, you know. But when I came back, I went to Grandma and Grandpa's place of business down in the Bronx, and Auntie Anne worked next door. And in the meantime, I didn't know about it, but she was in contact with Grandma and Grandpa, and she kept in contact with them, because actually she lived around the corner from where Grandma and Grandpa had their business, their restaurant business. And she was quite often went there, and then we kind of fell in love, and then the next thing you know, I got married, and mm-hmm. Grandpa says to me, "But what's the matter with you?" Stupid. So I says, "Why? What's the matter? You're stupid. You're marrying a Sicilian girl. What are you gonna do, Grandpa?"
Yeah.
You know, she hooked me. She caught me. You know, and that was it. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of fun talking about it, joking about it. Mm-hmm. And then Grandma taught her how to cook the way I like to eat, and I used to say to her, "Yeah, you learn that, and I'll teach you the other half that Grandma didn't teach you, you know." But it was always a standing joke, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hey, one of those things, you know.
Yeah.
So you got enough for your report or what? You need more?
No, I think that's good.
So don't make me a hero. I'm not a hero. I'm just an ordinary guy, and I don't know if you can see my hat. Can you see my hat now?
No, the picture never loaded. The video never loaded.
Okay, so Savannah will take a picture of me wearing a hat, and she'll send it to you.
Okay.
And you did. Okay. But I don't like to wear it. Because I don't know. I was never one of these gung-ho guys, as they would say. Mm-hmm. I still meet a lot of them around, you know. They got their hats on and all, and everything else. To me, I did what I had to do, and I left, and that was it. And goodbye, forgot about everything. Only one man I ever met when I came home, one of the fellows I was in service with. And I only met him for a short time, but other than that, never met him. Never met anybody that was in service with me again.
Really?
Never looked for them, never wanted to see them, never wanted to have any more contact with them. That was it, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I see your dad, your grandpa's in the background there.
Yeah, he came in.
He's holding you up or what? Or no. You holding him up?
Nope. I just wanted to say thank you so much for your time, just so I can...
My time is unlimited. I'm going to be in Hawaii with your grandfather and your grandma.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh,